Yeah, my name's Jeff. I'm an adult child of dysfunction. I'm in Dallas, Texas. And yeah, Terry asked me to speak here. And I had spoke, I think, like a year or so ago here. And it just came about that I didn't get recorded and it was too long and they couldn't get my share up. And I was talking to Terry about it. And Terry goes, "Well, I got like three dates in December. Which one do you want?" And I was like, "Well, I guess the 19th, that'll work." So here I am. And I've been coming to ACA for, oh, I don't know, almost a little over 2 years. My regular meeting is the Tuesday night Loving Parent Solution meeting. We meet only on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Central. And I'm in service with that meeting pretty hardcore. I won't get into that just yet. I guess I should do what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. So you guys kind of have a little bit of an idea of where I came from and I guess qualify. I've been sober for almost 14 years and I got sober in a different fellowship that I don't really attend that much. Actually, I don't attend at all anymore. ACA is my thing. I grew up in an alcoholic home, an active alcoholic home, and I wasn't actually like neglected because my mom was like the superhero, codependent. She did a lot of the things that we needed to have done. There was a lot of abuse, towards my mother from my father that I witnessed as a kid, and it still affects me a lot today. It does. My dad, he ended up getting sober in 1988, and his mother had passed away, and I think that's why he decided. Oh, he also had a lawsuit that he was embroiled in. It was a massive lawsuit, and that was a highly stressful time in the house. I remember that. And he sobered up, and things were okay for a while, while he sobered up. Me and my father don't really have a relationship today. We have, but it's just not healthy. I've had to draw the line there, with him. And anyway, so he sobered up, and then there was a bomb that happened about 2 years into his sobriety, and my mom filed for divorce, and that hit me pretty hard. As I was 12 years old when that happened, I think, and I ended up actually going to live with my father out of that, and I don't know how the hell, that was okay, that happened, or that my mom was okay for that. I was angry at my mom for a lot of years for that. Because she just let me go, and I went to go live with him. And the high school years were tough. I was in a high school where my mom taught, and I found the drinking and the drugging, and I was I just didn't go to school. I didn't go to school, and the school should have probably taken my dad to court. I probably would have ended up back with my mom, but I don't regret any of it, but looking back now, and especially having a kid myself, there were a lot of things that I think, my mom could have done a whole lot better. And she did discuss that with me later in life, right before she passed. But anyway, living with dad, my mom wasn't there for him to abuse, so therefore I became that person. And yeah, skipping school, not going, drugs, girls. Oh yeah, girls. Girls happened about that time too, And I was always seeking approval. I didn't really know that until I came into the program and started working, the steps and stuff, that there was a lot of that, that I was acting out, I was rebelling, And I spent 4 years in the ninth grade at the same high school where my mom taught. And that was tough. That was tough. I started to isolate a lot at that time, and I didn't go back to school after that fourth year, ninth grade. I remember hitting 18, thinking, man, I'm out of this, and then I ended up with a DUI right after that. I won't really get into that because that's a different for a different program. But yeah, I ended up moving in with a girl pretty early in my 20s, and that was a catastrophe. I mean, that was absolutely awful. And that was in Ohio. I live in Texas now. And I think in 2005, she had had enough of me. So then I moved back down here, where this is where my dad was, And so I moved back down here, and I got my GED. I did things, that I thought, trying to get approval, once again from my father. That, I mean, I had a therapist tell me, later on that, you can keep trying to do that, but it's never gonna happen. You're never gonna get his approval. So you should probably, direct your energy in other areas and other ways. And, the drinking was always there. I always hear that line when we talk about that. And I think it's either in the problem or the solution. We either became alcoholics or we married them. And, that was my story. It was a whole lot easier to drink and isolate and medicate and all those feelings that I had, and all the failures that I had become. And one thing led to another. I ended up sobering up here in Dallas, probably 2000, oh, what was it, 2000, August, yeah, 2011, August 9th of 2011 is when I had my last drink. And I met a girl, and my mom was sick. She had ovarian cancer at the time, and I just wanted approval, man. That's all I ever wanted. And I met a girl in the fellowship, and she was in law school. And what better way to get my parents' approval than to marry a lawyer? I thought that was a great thing, and then my mom didn't make it to see me get married. She died, 6 months. She passed 6 months before my wedding day. And it was like, I was gonna marry this girl. I was, because in my mind, I had cousins and uncles on my mom's side, because there wasn't really any active alcoholism on that side of the family. And I knew they were coming to my wedding. I knew they were, and I was like, I gotta make it, I gotta marry this girl because these people are coming from out of state. I have to do it, And what I should have done is I should have hit the brakes, I should have hit the brakes. I should have grieved my mom's death, and I didn't really get a chance to do that before I got into my marriage. And, within, I would say, 2 months of being married, we're in therapy. We're in marital therapy 2 months in. It's funny these days, because I can look back into my emails, and the threats from my now ex-wife, saying that if I didn't do this or I didn't do that, or she was going to file, and I still have some of those motions, and I look at them from time to time. It's kind of comical these days. But I married her. Things were going okay for a while. We bought the house. I ended up with an inheritance, so I was able to put the down payment on the house. And it's funny these days, because I have a daughter that came out of that marriage. And I have to tell myself, sometimes I get mad that I still live in an apartment and I don't have a house, or this, that, or the other thing. But my daughter is in that school system where I put that down payment on that house, and that's the way I justify it, these days, and it's the most sense I could make of it. And I think it works out pretty well when I think that way. I do. And we ended up having a daughter, probably about, I don't know, 2 years before the marriage fell apart. We had Natalie. And Natalie was about, oh, I don't know, a year, 18 months, 18 months, I think, 18 months, when my wife finally decided she wanted the separation. And that was probably one of the most horrific things that I ever had to live through. You know, my mom was gone, the marriage was gone, you know, my daughter was gone, which was huge, you know. And I ended up living with my ended up moving in with my sister because I couldn't see myself, you know, getting a place to live, you know. And very gracious that my sister allowed me to do that. And through that, I had it was an ugly, ugly, absolutely awful divorce, you know. And you know, I was called pretty much every name in the book, you know, via, you know, motions and discovery and interrogatories and every nasty thing. Oh, I forgot to tell you, my ex-wife is a family law attorney too, so that I really hit the jackpot on that one. And but you know what? I'm here, I'm breathing, I survived it. I didn't drink, you know, and slowly but surely, you know, I got myself back up on my feet. And how I made it to ACA, it's kind of a crazy thing that happened. I started listening to these podcasts on I don't know, she was on just about every platform at the time. She's since passed away. And you know, I started listening to her things on grief, and I started listening to her stuff on, you know, abandonment, and I started listening to her stuff on, you know, isolation and, you know, her whole system that she had, you know. And I ended up doing, she did these boot camps. She had Facebook groups and certain things, and she was nationally known. She had written a couple books, and she was also an attorney and a therapist, which really helped. It helped me. One thing that they would that relationship with that therapist helped me do is it helped me communicate with my ex-wife in an effective way, in a way that, you know, I mean, I could draw boundaries, you know, because that's another thing that I had a lot of problems with was boundaries. And yeah, so I started working with the therapist. I ended up moving in with my dad because it was a whole lot closer to where I was working. I was killing myself driving 185 miles round trip from my sister's to my job and back to get Natalie and everything else. And you know, I had those podcasts, and I had her, and I had sessions, and I had the boot camps and stuff. And you know, that therapist holds a very, very, very special place in my heart. She's no longer with us, but you know, I remember she was sick. She ended up on, you know, her kidneys failed. She had lupus, and that's how she ended up passing away. And I remember sitting on that couch right over there, and we had our last session, and she said to me, Jeff, she said, "I'm not going to be around forever, you know." And she said, "You're an adult child just like I am," because she was. And I knew about ACA. I had done some meetings. She said, "You need to start going to meetings because I'm not going to be around forever, you know." And that was kind of the last session we had. And she passed. And when she passed, it was like the Band-Aid got ripped off on a level that I hope I never feel again. Because it was her, it was my marriage, it was my family, my childhood. I mean, everything. When she passed, it was like, okay, holy shit, like you've got to do something because you just can't, you can't live life, man. You just can't. You know, I used to react to things. You know, I used to freak out, flip out, you know. It's just crazy where I am today to where I was then, you know. And I remember I had Natalie Sunday to Tuesday, and it was like Tuesday at 6, I dropped her off, and I'm like, I got to find a meeting. I have to find a meeting on Tuesdays, you know, that I can go to every week, that I can make no matter what, come hell or high water. I'm going to be there, you know. And I signed into the Loving Parent Solution meeting on Tuesday nights. And they were having some service things going on. And I remember I had gone to like three meetings, and I had made three contributions via Venmo, and all three of my contributions were not accepted. And I had never used Zoom before. I had never done chat before. I had never done anything on Zoom before. And I got in the chat and I messaged one of the service members and I said, "Hey, I've got three contributions that I've given and they haven't been accepted." And the person on the other end of the other end of the chat, she goes, "Well," she goes, "we don't really have a treasurer, dot, 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 dot." And I knew from being in my other fellowship that the service helped me get sober, you know. And I knew that if I picked up a service commitment, that I would stay, and that I would be able to, you know, I'd be able to be somewhere every week and be accountable and not be in isolation, I guess is the right way to say it. Because I'll tell you what, man, I still some days I can isolate with the best of them. I really can. And that Tuesday meeting, feelings, they suck sometimes, right? It saved my life, man. It saved my life. You know, becoming the treasurer of that group and doing the things every week and then being on a service committee, and we completely redid the meeting. You know, all the intros, and it was on that. And you know, I just you know I facilitate now. I've done security. I post to chat because I figured out how to do that. That's another funny story for another time, but I could do that. But the one thing that I could see that was changing for me going to those meetings was my parenting. You know, because from the home that I grew up in and the teenage years that I had to live in, you know, I didn't have a role model, you know. I didn't have somebody that knew what they were doing, especially with me, and I didn't really know what I was doing. You know, I had the therapist, but she was gone, and there were some things I worked on there, but you know, coming to these meetings and sharing how I was feeling, you know, was big. It was big, you know. And that meeting that I have, it's a chapter eight meeting, so it's just on, you know, becoming your own loving parent. And it's been pretty remarkable, you know, to not yell at my daughter hardly ever. If at all. And I know that if I hadn't done that, you know, and started doing that and going every week, that wouldn't even be in the realm. I don't even want to, because we also potty trained through that. We did potty train through that, I think. And that was challenging. But I got through that. And you know, there's another service member in that group that was like, you know, how's it going with you in the steps? You doing the steps, Jeff? How's that going for you? And I said, "Well, it's kind of non-existent right now, you know, but you know, I really want to, you know." And then the other thing that I did is I actually was on the service committee for the New Hope meeting on Sunday mornings. I was doing that for a while. I was doing that because I was the newcomer greeter at the chapter eight meeting on Tuesday. So I was doing Sunday mornings. And then I decided that it would be a great idea to form my own yellow book study with you know, any guy on Facebook that was, because I know the New Hope meeting had a Facebook group, and I just posted on there one day. I said, "Hey, look, I'm looking for guys to do this book because I can't seem to find anything or anybody to, you know, that I can go through this with." And lo and behold, I got one guy from the New Hope meeting. And then he got another guy from some of these two guys who were overseas in Europe. And then I had another guy that was in Arizona. And we got pretty far into that book. And, you know, it was getting kind of challenging because I was doing that on Sundays and I was doing the New Hope meeting. And then I was doing like a 2 to 3 hour call for the yellow book, you know, and I marched pretty much all the way through to like step four. And that's kind of where I am now, because I need to find somebody. I've asked a few people if they'd sponsor, and I haven't really had much success that way. It's tough. You know, it's tough to find, you know, people that want to step up and help that way. And but I'm not giving up. I'm not giving up on that. I'm not. And the group actually disbanded because I wasn't getting, I don't really know the way to say this, but it just the four guy thing just wasn't comfortable for me anymore. You know, I was running it, and then, you know, I felt myself starting to isolate a little bit, you know, and then I had to really look at why I was isolating. And, you know, when it came down to it, I just honestly didn't feel comfortable in that group with those four guys. And, you know, that's okay. You know, that was okay. And I sent a message in the WhatsApp group and I left that group. I didn't leave the group per se, you know, like in the next couple of weeks, I kind of saw that they were, you know, they were steaming forward, and I just didn't, you know. Then I asked another guy if he would be willing to go through the yellow book, and you know, he wasn't. We talked a few times. He was kind of busy, and you know, it just didn't work out, you know, but I'm committed to, you know, continuing to go through that. The one other thing that has happened in the last year is that I found myself in a relationship, you know, an intimate relationship. And it's pretty crazy, you know, when you don't when you don't have to nuke the relationship, you know, because you just don't have to nuke the relationship, you know, like with the reacting and stuff like that, you know. And like, I have my own place, she has her own place, but you know, we enjoy each other's company, you know. We work together, and it's challenging at times. It is, but it's worth it, you know. You know, it's worth it, you know, learning how to breathe, you know, when things are not right. You know, it's worth it to, you know, count to, like my old AA sponsor used to tell me, say, count to 10 and wait 3 days, you know. Sometimes I do that, you know what I mean? And it's just been unbelievable. It really has. And at the start of that relationship, it was really rocky. You know, it was really rocky because she had some issues with alcohol, and for whatever reason, I just didn't trust it. You know, I didn't trust what was going on, you know, and I kind of realized, you know, like it was like I was just waiting for that other shoe to drop. I was just waiting for something to happen, you know. And it's kind of crazy when you don't react and you just kind of let things, you let that person do their thing and you do your thing. And, you know, it's just crazy, you know, when you just let life happen, you know, and you don't try to control it. And it's been pretty awesome. It has, you know. And the one thing that really held me in this relationship was that with the girl that I'm with, she respected my boundary with me and my daughter. You know, there's a lot of times I you know, these relationships or whatever would pop up with you know, women. And for whatever reason, man, it's like they just want to meet my kids like tomorrow, or my kid, not my kids, but you know, and like I just have to just hit the brakes. I'd have to just like, you know, no contact with that or whatever, with whoever, you know, I was talking to at the time, and it just didn't work out, you know. But she respected it, you know. And I said, look, I said, you're not going to meet my daughter for 6 months. You're just not. And she was like, okay, you know. And she did meet my daughter, and it's been pretty awesome, you know. Now, probably I could tell you a few stories that happened the last couple of weeks, but it's been really neat. I felt a lot of feelings the last couple of weeks, you know. I put Natalie in guitar lessons because she wants to play guitar. I said, okay. You know, the money wasn't right, so I went out and I've been driving Lyft, you know, just to make, you know, ends meet so that she can play guitar. And it's pretty awesome, like being a dad and being present.
And she had a recital 2 weeks ago, and my girlfriend went, and my ex-wife went, and her boyfriend went, and grandma was there, and it was just, I set a clear boundary. I set a clear boundary. I sent a message to we used the parenting app through the courts, and I just said, look, I said, I've been taking her to guitar. I said, I'd like to pick her up at 9:15. The recital's at 10. I said, I know her teacher. I know how to get her in there. I know we got to get her guitar tuned, this, that, and the other. My ex-wife said, that's fine. Just come get her at 9:15. And we went. And she went up there. And she's been practicing Jingle Bells with her teacher for like 2 months. She's been doing the lessons. And I didn't think he was going to let her. I didn't think he was going to let her do the recital. I just didn't think he was going to let her do it because I'm like, maybe not, And Mike was like, no, she can do it. She can do it. And so that came to fruition. And we went in, and I told Natalie on the way there, I said, look, I said, you do the recital, you come give me your guitar, you can go sit with your mom, watch the rest of it. And she played, and it was the neatest and coolest thing I'd ever seen. It was just amazing. And she gets her guitar, she comes off stage, she hands me the guitar, I put the guitar away, she goes with her mom, but I gave her a hug before she went. And when I gave her a hug before she went for her mom, I lost it. I lost it. As the tears were flowing. And I don't know where I'm going with this. All I know is that, being present in my meetings on Tuesday nights, going through the yellow book with those guys like I did, being in an intimate relationship that I'm not trying to control. It's something that it just keeps getting better. And I hope I never get too far away from ACA ever. It's like a friend of mine in my Tuesday meeting tells me, she said, Jeff, she said, it's a lifelong process. And I think I'm gonna try to stay for a while. So that's what I've got, guys. Thanks for letting me share.